Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're not video streaming tonight, so you can just eat your heart out, huh? It is 7 past the hour. Boy, it's fun watching the crazy right just going berserk over the ruling by the Republican Bush-appointed judge in California who said that Prop 8 in California violated the constitutional protection of equal protection under the law, yada, yada, yada. Everybody from Rick Santorum to, the one that likes to carry around pocket fetuses with him, all the way to Newt Gingrich, who honestly believes that more than 60 or 70 people would vote for him if he ever decided to run for president. Oh my God. I don't know. And Gingrich's sister is gay. It's just amazing to me. Isn't it to you how obscene the Republicans can be when they really, really put their minds to it? What a bunch of piglets. The head of Target CEO Greg Steinhafel apologized today about a political donation that Target Corporation made. And it went to, they made it to a business group backing a homophobic, freaky, conservative Republican who's running for Minnesota governor. When the contribution became public, of course, some employees and a lot of consumers just said, yo, no, you don't. Well, Target CEO Greg Steinhafel wrote employees to say the discount retailer was, quote, genuinely sorry, end quote, over the way the $150,000 contribution to Minnesota Forward donation played out. Mr. Steinhafel said Target would set up a review process for future political donations. Well, I'll tell you what, Greg, I appreciate your mea culpa, but what in the hell are you making political contributions to your corporation to begin with? Aren't you in the business of selling junk? Can't you just go ahead and sell your junk? God knows Americans will come in and buy your junk. I buy your junk. I buy your dishwasher detergent. I buy your bathroom tissue. I buy your Kleenex. What the hell are you doing supporting political candidates, your corporation? Tell you what, Greg, if you want to support a monkey for office, well, I guess that's been done, hasn't it? If you want to support a monkey for office, go ahead. I don't give a tinker's damn who you support. But the Target Corporation, you come out today and apologize because this freak who wound up getting Target Corporation's money, where does the money come from, Greg? It comes from chumps like me who buy your junk. Man, you're going to set up a review process for future. I've got a review process for you. One word. Don't. Minnesota Forward is running TV ads supporting Tom Emmer. A teabag type opposed to same-sex marriage and other gay rights initiatives that have come before Minnesota's legislature. So, Target sticks its ass into the middle of this? How dare you, Greg Steinhafel? What do you expect now? All of us gay simps are just going to pack our tent and go home? Well, we fixed him, didn't we? We got him to apologize. Woo-hoo! Tell you what, Greg, next time I find out you make a political contribution to your corporation, makes a political contribution to anybody, will be the last time I buy your junk. All right? How's that? He issued a statement that said, "Well, I firmly believe that a business climate conducive to growth is critical to our future. I realize our decision affected many of you in a way I did not anticipate. And for that, I'm genuinely sorry. End quote. What a jackass. You mean this guy didn't think that contributing $150,000 of corporate profits that come from, oh, I don't know, black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight people who go by his junk, he didn't think that would piss us off? What do you use for brains, Greg? Corn cobs? What the hell is wrong with you? He added, the diversity of our team is an important aspect of our unique culture, little baba, and our success, but up bam bam, as a company. And we did not hoopita hoopita mean to disappoint you, woohoo, our team, or our valued guests. I'm not your goddamn guest! Excuse me. I'm a customer. I come in and buy your junk. Guest? Well, if I'm your guest, you just gave me the guest bedroom, and I pulled the covers back, and there was a big pile of steaming dog crap in the middle. What is wrong with you people? Guests. Target is known in Minnesota for helping sponsor the annual Twin Cities Gay Pride Festival. Really? Well, then, I mean, is your company really that schizophrenic, Greg? Stay out of politics, you half-wit. Keep your corporation out of it. I don't care who you contribute to. I know who you'd contribute to. Any right-wing geek who will say, well, let's work something out here so Target never pays any corporate taxes. All right, next target, according to public campaign reports, other contributors to Minnesota Forward include Red Wing Shoe Company, Best Buy, Pent Air, Hubbard Broadcasting, oh, that sounds like a behemoth, Davisco Foods International, and Polaris Industries. What is that? What do they make, submarines?
We didn't mean to disappoint our valued guests.
Go to hell, Greg, and take your Target junk corporation with you, please, okay?
Oh, we're sorry. We didn't realize our money... You know, we support the queers when they have that big parade. We love that parade. I love that parade.
God, I hate these people. Okay, now I have to apologize, everybody. I used the GD word. Okay, it was in a fit of pique, or a peak of fit, or something. And we'll probably lose another 20 affiliates over that. Well, I didn't use the F word, so...
We will set up a review committee about who we contribute to next time.
I mean, the audacity of that statement. Although, why not? We live in a corporatist society. Why should I or you or anyone who still entertains even a shadow of a memory of what this country was founded on and how the framers warned us against corporations even back then? Why are we surprised that now, after the Supreme Court ruling, that Target has decided to stick its junk-selling ass right in the middle and start handing out hundreds of thousands of dollars to homophobes? Why, of course. Stuff.
watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This is kind of funny. The U.S. military is banning personnel from visiting the WikiLeaks website. Oh, my God. Yeah, how about that? Now, let's see. What are we fighting for? That's right. We're fighting in Afghanistan, in Iraq. Well, not us. The people who haven't figured out yet what's going on, I guess. We're fighting for freedom. Now, by the way, soldier, Marine, sailor, don't you by God dare go to WikiLeaks. Sarge, I'm fighting for freedom. Somebody else's, soldier, not yours. United States military will take care of your freedom. A July 29 message to sailors from the Navy's National Security Litigation Law Division said, quote, Department of Navy personnel should not access the WikiLeaks website to view or download the publicized classified information. Doing so would introduce potentially classified information or unclassified networks. There has been rumor that the information is no longer classified since it resides in the public domain. This is not true. End quote. Well, how can something be classified if it's in the public domain? Asked if the Pentagon is making the site off limits, Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman told the Mooney newspaper that all four services, quote, have put out such messages. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're fighting for freedom, soldier, but damn sure not yours. Don't you look at that. Don't you look at that site. Oh, Polaris Industries, one of the people that's supporting the homophobic crazy man in running for governor of Minnesota. Boy, that would be great, wouldn't it? Minnesota, which used to be, Minnesota! Didn't it used to be a place that was honored because of the Democrat Farmer Labor Alliance, progressive politics in Minnesota? You know who used to be senator from Minnesota? Well, Polaris Industries, one of the people making contributions to the homophobe, is, quote, is a manufacturer of snowmobiles, ATV, golf carts, and neighborhood electric vehicles. Polaris is based in Medina, Minnesota, and a good deal of its parts manufacturing has been moved from Wisconsin to Monterrey, Mexico. Of course. Of course, that's the reason they support, the corporation supports political candidates. Absolutely. Because if this freak gets elected, governor or whatever they support, could be senator, they will just make sure that the laws are strengthened where it concerns corporate America being able to gouge and steal as much as they want. And you know how much that is? Right! Everything. Oh, my God. We have a sound clip for you. We're going to play, I guess not now. We'll play it when we come back, right after this bottom of the hour break. Glenn Beck, we cut it down. It runs about 3 minutes. I think we have a minute and 40 seconds. This psychopath we're getting close to the point where he is going to absolutely, his eyes are going to pop out of his head. His jaw is going to dislocate. There's going to be a bulge appear just below his breastbone. And he's going to look into the camera. And all of a sudden, instead of screaming, he'll be gurgling. And all of a sudden, his chest is going to burst open. And out will come this thing with fangs and eyes, holding a Glock 9mm. And the thing will say, and that will be the end of Beck. It's close. That moment is coming. And we have the tape. We have the sound, the audio to prove it to you when we come back. I hope it all happens on the same day. Beck goes berserk, and the monster inside of him kills him. Chaney's extension cord breaks. And the teabagger party finds himself surrounded by people of color who commit a mass lynching. Oh, Lord, it's going to be a great getting up morning. I swear to God it will be.
You're wondering who I am.
Secret, I've got a secret.
Machine-o-matic.
Secret, I've got a secret.
With parts made in Japan.
Secret, I've got a secret.
I've got the secret I've been hiding under my skin. My heart is human. My blood is boiling. My brain IBM. So if you see me acting strangely, don't be surprised. I'm just a man who needed someone and someone to hide to keep me.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Before we go to the crazy man, Beck is just, he's like any midway barker. He's figured out a way to fleece the terminally stupid. But anyway, Bruce writes, the purpose of big box stores is not to sell junk like Target or Walmart. Their purpose, or Best Buy, their purpose is to use capital to overwhelm American businesses and eliminate them. They don't produce anything, the big box stores. They don't do anything better or more efficient. They have huge bureaucracies and multiple levels of management with obscene pay at the top. They consume more resources while burning a lot more fossil fuel than the businesses they eliminate. Their so-called advantage is that they can control wholesale prices that are charged their smaller competitors, putting them, the competitors, at a disadvantage, while they, the big box stores, can selectively sell at a loss at new locations to speed up the death of local business. Abso-freaking-lutely. All right. Just when you thought this clownish, this murder clown, Beck, couldn't make himself into more of a complete cartoon figure, he tops himself by comparing Barack Obama to Lucifer! You know, Hitler and Stalin and Mao and Pol Pot is not enough. Lucifer! Satan! This is one for the ages. As, where's this from, Crooks and Liars? Dana Carvey couldn't have done a better church lady impression. No wonder so many conservatives are writing pieces about how embarrassing it is to be conservative this day, or these days. But Glenn Beck is the face of the conservative movement in 2010. Now, I'm going to play the clip for you. And right towards the middle of the clip, you can guess when it happens. This is from his television program on Fox. He shows a graphic behind him that says in red, flaming, smoking letters, Lucifer. Listen, my children.
You know what? Republicans don't have a lot of new ideas. There are a lot of retread ideas. That's why I think, Mr. President, you should talk to those Tea Party people. Because they got some really new ideas they haven't tried in about, 150 years. Of course, now your ideas, they're brand new. When I first heard your ideas about 1848, trying to think, when did Karl Marx write that stuff down? Oh, no, seriously.
Oh, my God.
You've got ideas that have unquestionably failed, and failed spectacularly every time they've been tried. No, I know. Oh, it's just never been done right. Broken economy after broken economy, continent after continent, millions dead. I don't know if it can be done right. I'm not willing to give it a whirl. Why are you, Mr. President, giving a few people power to save the collective? You know, I've been thinking about this. It's not even Marxism.
No.
Older than 1848. Yeah. A lot older. Maybe the oldest idea known to man. I will save them all. Where have I heard that?
Lucifer!
I will save them all. And they will all return to you. Give me the credit. Oh, that's good. That's good. I know I've heard that someplace. Kind of the ends justify the means, and Saul Alinsky. Oh, you know what? I remember where I heard that. It wasn't Saul Alinsky, but I read about it in his book. Who did Saul Alinsky dedicate his book to? It was,
I don't know. Let me think. Could it have been Satan?
It's funny. It has become very slowly funny. I still hope he kills himself on his TV show, but because he will commit suicide eventually. Mark my words. But in the meantime, I have to say he is starting to provide some incredible humor.
Well, isn't that special?
I mean, he really is. You talk about somebody who is it just, I don't know. He's like a big chunk o' hubris, isn't he? This guy flashes pictures. Now, who are you going to top after Marx didn't work? Stalin didn't work. Trotsky didn't work. Mao didn't work. Adolf didn't work. And now Satan doesn't work. Who's next, Glenn? Huh? Think of something. Do it before you blow your brains out on your program, please.
Yeah, you kind of blow it all right there. You have no more cash once you've gone to Satan. Once you've gone to Lucifer. You know, like you said, you've tried Trotsky, you've tried Hitler, you've tried Marx, you know, Stalin. Once you hit Satan, you're kind of done.
That's it. That's
but I
it.
Will say, I like Glenn's stylish new glasses. They're getting thicker and thicker every day. I think he's wearing them for effect.
Well,
either that or to hide the Vaseline, what, vapor up.
Well, you know he's going blind. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, Glenn. Oh, my goodness. I have to drop this into the program. After busting up on the ADL the other night, Anti-Defamation League, as I did, I think it was last night, wasn't it? About their stance on the mosque, the Islamic Center, I should say. It's not really technically a mosque. It's an Islamic center to be built near Ground Zero. And we got into just a very brief sketch of how the ADL was put together and what its mission statement was all those years ago. And but I think in fairness, I should share this with you. It's from Robert Sugarman, who's national chairman of the Anti-Defamation League. And this was in the New York Times. He writes, "We disagree with your editorial of August 4th, A Monument to Tolerance, in what it said and what it did not say about the Anti-Defamation League. We did not eagerly pile on with the bigots. Indeed, we have publicly taken on those who criticized the mosque in ways that reflected anti-Muslim bigotry or used the controversy for that purpose. Yes, ADL has been fighting bigotry since the days of the Klan, but we have also been specifically combating Islamophobia, sometimes alone, since 9/11. It was the ADL that took out a major advertisement in this newspaper after 9/11 with the headline, "Let us not fight hatred with hatred," to combat stereotyping and violence against Muslims after the terrorist attack. It was the ADL that spoke out on behalf of a Muslim congressman when some assailed his wish to take the oath of office on the Quran. It was the ADL that condemned an Ohio decision barring a Muslim woman from wearing a religious facial garment in court. And there are many other such examples of our leadership in this area. In this case, as when Carmelite nuns in the 1980s sought to build a convent by Auschwitz, we took the position that the impact of such a construction on or near a site of such pain and tragedy was not the path to reconciliation. Then Pope John Paul II agreed, and the chapel was built a mile away. We have not denied the right to build the mosque on the site. We simply appealed to the initiators to consider the sensitivities of the victims and find another location. It is this issue, not religious freedom, and surely not bigotry against Muslims, that led us to our statement. In the final analysis, well-meaning people can disagree on this matter without castigating the intentions or actions of an organization like ours that actively fights bigotry, including that against Muslims. And it's signed Robert Sugarman, National Chair, Anti-Defamation League, New York. Okay. Fair enough. All right, we have a break coming. And when we come back, we have a report from Prairie 2 this evening. Oh. What do you suppose is the next target of the corporate predators? Well, Prairie 2's email tonight will identify that target for you. You might be surprised. On the other hand, I don't think you'll be surprised at all. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
To practice your synchronized screaming, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. A couple of excerpts, I should say, from the federal court judge's ruling on Prop 8 that I found to be compelling. You can find the full text, if you want to see it, at newyorktimes.com/national. And it is a lengthy ruling. A couple of excerpts. The judge wrote, quote, marriage in the United States has always been a civil matter. Let's pause for a second. I mean, you don't have to go any further than that. You know, these freaks like Rick Santorum, he who likes to carry pocket fetuses around with him, and insist that marriage is strictly and solely a sacrament of the church. That would be the church he belongs to. It may be a sacrament of different religions. But in the United States, it has always been a civil matter. As we've said before, that's why the priest, the imam, or the rabbi says, and now by the power vested in me by the state of blank, I pronounce you man and wife. The religious figure never says, now by the power vested in me by God, I pronounce you man and wife. Marriage in the United States, the judge wrote, has always been a civil matter. Civil authorities may permit religious leaders to solemnize marriages, but not to determine who may enter or leave a civil marriage. Religious leaders may determine independently whether to recognize a civil marriage or divorce, but that recognition or lack thereof has no effect on the relationship under state law. How clear does it have to be for these monkeys? People like Newt Gingrich, who is still crawling around, isn't he? Every once in a while, out of the corner of your eye, you'll see some movement, and you look over, and here comes Newt scuttling across the carpet, looking for a podium to hoist himself up and start talking about, well, I'm full of new ideas. No, you're not, Newt. You're full of poison. The judge goes on, Prop 8 was premised on the belief that same-sex couples simply are not as good as opposite-sex couples. Whether that belief is based on moral disapproval of homosexuality, animus toward gays and lesbians, or simply a belief that a relationship between a man and woman is inherently better than a relationship between two men or two women, this belief is not a proper basis on which to legislate. Duh! The Constitution cannot control private biases, but neither can it tolerate them. California's obligation is to treat its citizens equally, not to mandate its own moral code. Moral disapproval without any other assertion or asserted state interest has never been a rational basis for legislation. The evidence of trial at trial regarding the campaign to pass Proposition 8 uncloaks the most likely explanation for its passage, which is a desire to advance the belief that opposite-sex couples are morally superior to same-sex couples. Moral disapproval alone is an improper basis on which to deny rights to gay men and lesbians. Again, duh! The judge continues, Proposition 8 fails to advance any rational basis in singling out gay men and lesbians for denial of a marriage license. Indeed, the evidence shows Proposition 8 does nothing more than enshrine in the California Constitution the notion that opposite-sex couples are superior to same-sex couples. Well, anyway, there's more, but you can read the entire, I think it was 136-page opinion ruling that the judge issued. But it is, it's kind of fun to watch the cockroaches now from the right just crawling all over this decision, blaming the liberals who are undermining the sanctity of marriage. It's the liberals. Oh, my God. And when you stop and consider who defended in court in California the right of same-sex couples to get a marriage contract. And when you consider that the judge issuing the ruling in California is a Republican appointee, I fail to see how this works out to being a liberal plot to undermine the sanctity of marriage. Oh, please. I'll tell you what, Rick Santorum, the dead fetus handler, and the rest of you right-wing freaks, if you truly believe that same-sex couples should not get married, then I have a suggestion for you. If you're a man, don't marry a man. And if you're a woman, don't marry a woman. But short of that, sit down and shut your damn mouth. It is 7 past the hour. And by the way, program note, check the MikeMalloy.com website next week, about the middle of next week. We have an important announcement to make about this program. So we'll probably post something, what, Kathy, Wednesday? Tuesday or Wednesday? Okay. Next week, important announcement about the Malloy program. Reg at TVNewsLies.org, in response to my reading the letter from Mr. Sugarman, the ADL, that appeared in today's New York Times, where Mr. Sugarman insists that, was it Sugarman? Yeah, I think, insists that the ADL is not being bigoted in lobbying to deny Muslims their center near Ground Zero. Reg writes, then why is it all right for the Museum of Jewish Heritage to stand near Ground Zero and for Trinity Church to continue to serve the community only 150 yards from where the World Trade Center stood? The Muslim Center would be about two city blocks from the original World Trade Center. The ADL is full of itself. This was a blast to placate the right-wing zealots in the Jewish community here in New York. Did you see the placards they carried? Garbage like, they can build a mosque at Ground Zero when we can build a synagogue in Mecca. Sugarman did not renounce the protesters or their ugly messages. He simply justified a racist message. Reg, they can build a mosque at Ground Zero when we can build a synagogue in Mecca? Oh, tell me again, what is the function of religion other than to divide and destroy? All right, Prairie 2. His piece tonight is cutting holes in the safety net. Ooh. Initial unemployment claims shot up for last week to 479,000, while continuing claims were down slightly. But that comes only from still more 99ers running out of benefits. A survey of economists predict tomorrow's jobs report, Friday's jobs report, will show a smaller number of jobs were lost in July than in June, when another 125,000 Americans were put out of work. But this same survey predicted unemployment claims would be down instead of up sharply. President Obama continues to make speeches on how the economy he inherited was shedding 750,000 jobs a month, and now it isn't, which is true, but the steady drip-drip will kill us just the same. There is no turnaround in sight, with scheduled layoffs announced by major corporations, charities and local governments up 6% in June to 42,000, and hiring announcements totaled just 8,100 jobs, down a third from the previous month. These numbers are compiled by private industry and don't tell the whole story on jobs, but simply show the trend of large employers that cooperate with their survey. But the government numbers aren't real numbers either, and are just attempts to estimate what is happening based on the data available. The Commerce Department has been revising numbers going back 3 years since the Bush administration put very little emphasis on accuracy, or maybe they just lied. Republicans are still saying Bush created millions of jobs. In fact, the only jobs he created were another million government employees, something the teabaggers constantly complain that Democrats do. In fact, no Democrat since LBJ has increased government, but the Republicans surely have. Flood inflation is picking up. I'm sorry, food inflation is picking up as the Wall Street banks look for some place to make money. People have got to eat, so why not gouge them? Success is measured by what percentage of people starve. Then you know you are maximizing demand. Grain is up, led by a sharp increase in wheat prices following Russia's halt of grain exports due to the ongoing drought and wildfires. Russia says they have plenty of grain, but aren't about to allow the transnational corporations to hoard it. The U.S. is expecting a bumper crop, but with so much of it tied up in the futures market, the price you pay in the store has little to do with whether the farmers make any money. So, expect to pay more for food. This will impact the 99ers, who will join the 7 million Americans whose only income is food stamps. The only bright spot is that today the Senate overrode a Republican filibuster to appropriate $10 billion to keep 140,000 teachers and 85,000 police and firefighters on the job. The Republicans didn't want that to happen. The bill is not as nearly as generous as the funding made available under the stimulus package that is running out. Other than pure mean-spiritedness, the Republicans opposed it to the bitter end because it's partly paid for by no longer allowing U.S. companies to deduct overseas taxes that they pay when outsourcing U.S. jobs. However, in order to get the token Republican votes to end the filibuster, the Democrats had to give a $12 billion cut to the food stamp program starting in 2014. The Democrats are playing a dangerous game by putting this cut into law with the assumption they can repeal it before it takes effect. The Clinton administration had similarly built in cost of living factors to the food stamp program to ensure slowly declining benefits in order to pump up his long-term budget numbers in order to get votes. Remember the ending welfare as we know it slogan of the Clinton balanced budget? Once the Republicans got full control, they merely did nothing and people went hungry. While there were modest reforms near the end of Bush's term, with the Democrats back in Congress after 12 years, the program is still subject to local administration, and the red states apply the rules in the most heartless way possible, with the intent of driving unemployed people from their states or simply killing them. When you add more canned goods to your survival pantry, take some of the old ones down to your local food bank. PrairieNumeral2.com. Food is the next target. Republicans have spent 70 plus years trying to destroy the middle class, working people. Every single program that Republican legislators or Republican administrations have pushed through have had as its end goal to destroy you, Mr. and Ms. Middle Class America. So why does anyone vote for these animals? Why? That's the part that I simply cannot understand. I mean, you may be suicide prone like Glenn Beck, but do you have to walk up to some wild-eyed looking maniac and hand him a rope and say, "Please, sir, throw this over the lamppost and put it around my neck and pull. Please?" I don't understand this. But I do understand this. That's one of the reasons that Glenn Beck is so wildly popular, is because there are so many people in this country who are also completely, irrevocably prone to their own destruction. And they display it every single time they go, quote, vote, end quote. About 22 past the hour. As expected, supporters of California's gay marriage ban have filed their appeal today. The appeal of U.S. District Court Judge Vaughn Walker, who ruled the law as passed by mob rule in California violates equal protection and due process, of course. The Ninth Circuit, where this appeal has been filed, has no deadline to hear the case. And the way this will work, it'll be randomly assigned to a three-judge panel. And if usual procedure is followed, both sides will submit written legal arguments as to, on the one hand, why the case or the decision should be upheld, and on the other hand, why the decision should be overturned. And, of course, the outcome of that will wind up in the United States Supreme Court. There is no question. I realize a lot of the editorial writers are using modifiers like it could wind up, it might wind up, the possibility it will wind up in the Supreme Court. Once this federal judge has ruled, there is absolutely, as he has, there's absolutely no way, I don't believe, that it will not wind up before the United States Supreme Court. We'll see. Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage. Oh, isn't that cute? Kind of like the National Organization for Women, only they changed the last word. Oh, you boys are just so damn creative, aren't you? Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage, which, of course, helped fund the campaign that led to the passage of the ban and the insistence that gay folk are second-class citizens, much like other minority groups have been declared second-class citizens by the Christian white majority for so long, huh, boys? Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage, says, quote, "This ruling, if allowed to stand, threatens not only Prop 8 in California, but the laws in 45 other states that define marriage as one man and one woman." Ah! End quote. The appeal itself was filed by Protect Marriage, a coalition of religious and conservative groups that sponsored also Prop 8 and wound up defending it after Arnold Schwarzenegger and Attorney General Jerry Brown said, "Oh, you guys go play in some other sandbox. We're just sick of this crap. Go away." It'll destroy the definition of marriage. Ah! That's the whole point, you moron. Defense lawyers argued at trial that the ban against people getting married who were part of a same-sex couple, that that ban was necessary to safeguard the traditional understanding of marriage and to encourage responsible childbearing. Damn it, like we have in the hetero marriages. We have responsible childbearing. We do. Even when we don't have children, it's still responsible. Huh, damn it. And when we get divorced, and when we commit all sorts of adultery and mayhem, and we get remarried and get divorced again and get remarried again and get divorced again. We always make sure that the little curtain climbers are well taken care of and aren't exposed to any queers. For sure. And stuff. In declaring Proposition 8 unconstitutional, Judge Walker accepted every argument advanced by the plaintiffs and methodically rejected every claim made by the defense. Preventing gays from marrying does nothing to strengthen heterosexual unions or serve any purpose that justifies its discriminatory effect, but in fact harms children with same-sex parents. And the judge said the state's interest, inequality, and the rule of law, and justice, and fair play. And I am so glad to see this kick right into the groin, the gonads, of these filthy right-wing hetero freaks. Oh, this will threaten our marriage. This will threaten me. Oh, my God. You mean queers can get married? Well, that means my marriage is threatened. Ah!
World, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting.
You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me over and over and over.
25 before the hour. My goodness, I think it is, Uncle Mike's Story Corner time. It is. Gather round, kiddies. It's very late at night here in the east. Time to snuggle down in your snuggies and feel the heat and enjoy another This one written by Mark Morford. Great news. I have now read and analyzed every single one of the 92,000 highly classified top secret documents recently uncovered in the WikiLeaks.org mega saga military scandal, the very ones being fretted over by President Obama, the Defense Department, and top members of the nervous Pakistani government, along with all those swarthy terrorist cells who are right now poring over them for helpful details like Lady Gaga tour dates or Mel Gibson's fave catchphrases and Lindsay Lohan's home address. I have scoured all the data, factored in the countless bombings and roadside detonations, and there are seemingly millions. I have made pie charts and bar graphs, plotted points of interest on special war paper, geolocated all the various deadly flashpoints using Google Earth, all while making 10,000 little explosion sounds with my mouth, just like George Bush used to do in the bathtub when Uncle Dick talked about liberating the Middle East. I've come to some important conclusions. First off, as mentioned just about everywhere, including by the president himself, talk of these documents putting lives at risk is complete and utter BS, and is merely meant to discourage and intimidate anyone from doing anything like this ever again, because it's all been just hugely embarrassing and humiliating to U.S. intelligence, sort of like Tiger Woods' pervy text messages appearing on the front page of USA Today. They hate that. What's more, the Defense Department itself has admitted it will be weeks, if not months, before it can sort through all the data and figure out what it might mean, if anything. You think the Taliban has this kind of time? The brain power? We have cool iPads, MIT geniuses, and supercomputers the size of France. They have a single filthy 2001 compact Presario and some string. I mean, please. But never mind that now, because there is a far larger truth I have uncovered in the roughly 3,000 hours I recently did not spend poring over the WikiLeaks documents, and it bears being writ large, screamed aloud, and then moaned softly in the night in pain over and over again for all eternity. It is this. Despite all our dazzling ultra-modern technology, despite all those infrared goggles and laser-guided everything, despite 1,000 announcements in weaponry and body advancements in weaponry and body armor, stratagems and 3D mapping, war remains the most despicable, thoroughly miserable human endeavor mankind has yet invented or will ever invent in this or any lifetime, and that includes Jersey Shore, Microsoft Windows, and Mel Gibson. Let these 92,000 documents eliminate all doubt. War is our basest, most vile creation. Has been for 10,000 years. Always will be. That's sort of reassuring, actually. Reliable. Hey, no matter how ugly it all gets, no matter if you kill your spouse, get hit by a bus, or win the lottery, at least we'll always have the horrors of war unchanged throughout time and galaxy. Nice. You don't have to believe me. You can read it for yourself right there on the WikiLeaks site. Go ahead. Click on through as I did. page after page, tale after tale, massacre after casualty, after bloodshed, after car bomb, after random explosion. It's like the world's most brutally mundane neighborhood police blotter. It goes on for days, the same tone, in the same way, snippet after snippet, scene after scene, horror after horror. It's like reaching into a giant basket of razor wire and shards of glass, trying to find the bottom that doesn't exist. Did you see The Hurt Locker? The stunning war movie that won the Oscar for being so gritty and realistic and tension-filled? That movie is like effing Gone with the Wind compared to what you read in these documents, compared to the real thing. Do you know why? Because that movie was compact, tense, economical, filmed with terse dialogue and specific scenes designed to impart hard emotions. It was also over in about 2 hours. Whereas the real thing is, well, nothing but endlessly ugly, sad, tedious, nauseating, deadening, exhausting, like peeling off a scab that never ends, like rubbing a grain of sand into your eye that only gets deeper and more painful, like driving down the world's longest desert highway, stretching off far into the distance, potholed with bombs and dead bodies, war crimes and shrapnel, oil slick and weapons contracts, all oversprinkled with a trillion American dollars raining down like fine green confetti. War is hell. Have you heard that before? Of course you have. Do you know what it means? From what I can tell from the WikiLeaks scandal, here is what it does not mean. It does not mean war is some sort of rugged, Herculean, manly, uber-patriotic exercise in glorious freedom, justice, truth that just might also, whoops, get a little bloody. It does not quite mean a noble force for good in democracy. It might have meant that once, long ago, for a shining moment, maybe on the back of a coin somewhere. It hasn't meant anything near that for 1,000 years. Capitalism saw to that. It's sort of like evil. We love to imagine evil to be this towering, fanged menace, this spectacular fiend, a creepy and gruesome beast born of 1,000 horror movies. The truth is at once far less interesting and yet far more terrifying, because evil is more like Dick Cheney's tiny sneer, or the religious nutball's weakest synapse, or the wheezing death of the soul. War is similar. It is no grand melodramatic spectacle, no sepia-toned Spielberg movie narrated by Tom Hanks, no epic Lord of the Rings battle royal between ogres and kings. It's just page after page, bomb after bomb, report after report, endlessly and forever, numbing to the core until history chokes it all down with a dry heave and an exhausted sigh. I'm certainly no expert. I do not know what darker secrets these WikiLeaks pages might contain. But it takes no genius whatsoever to scan this data and understand that modern battles like we've waged in Afghanistan and Iraq often take lifetimes to unravel. The truth is, we will all be dead before we know the full costs of these wars. A generation or two will have to pass before we can get them in scale and perspective, and even then, like so many before them, they still won't make any goddamn sense. Then again, they never do. How very comforting. Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode, written by Mark Morford, who happens to be the best writer in the known universe. This originally appeared at the San Francisco Chronicle website, sfgate.com. Yeah, Mark Morford is just astonishingly good. Whew. Oh, by the way, a bulletin from Buenos Aires, Argentina, today, Thursday. Argentina became the first country in Latin America to legalize same-sex marriage. The entire country. Following a landmark Senate vote, which stirred controversy in the majority Roman Catholic nation, the law was backed by the center-left government of President Cristina Kirchner and adopted in a 33-27 vote with three abstentions after 15 hours of debate. President Kirchner said to Argentine media today during a visit to China, quote, "It's a positive step which defends the right of the minority in Argentina." My goodness. The entire country.
And where all them pain, make my man have money to spend. And all the youth them know me and them friends. Rumors them spreading, ain't that a sense in me planting? But I'm a naughty daddy, naughty juggling. I've heard rumors of war.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Yes, indeed. 10 before the hour. The decision by the Senate in Argentina to legalize same-sex marriage in that country is pretty astonishing when you stop and think that 90% of the 40 million people in that country describe themselves as Roman Catholic. As reported by the French news agency, hundreds of people cheered outside the Senate as the bill passed, with some chanting, "Equality, equality," and other tearful couples embracing each other. Meanwhile, priests and their supporters held images of the Virgin Mary and prayed in the street. Some gay and leftist campaigners shouted, "Church, you garbage! You're a dictatorship!" Yeah. Police had to separate opposing groups who hurled eggs and oranges at each other outside the Senate the previous day. The former president, Adolfo Rodriguez Saya said, quote, "Argentina has taken a step forward, but out in the street, it will take time for hatred and resentment to heal." I don't know what that means. The Catholic Church had called unsuccessfully for a national referendum on the issue. More mob rule. No. The Senate decided. President Kirchner said in criticism of some church leaders today, quote, "Talking about God's war, for example, showed a radicalization which was in no way positive," end quote. Yeah, war on gay folk. The law alters the legal code to no longer refer to a husband and wife, but rather refers to, quote, "the marrying parties," end quote. Same-sex couples will not have the same rights as heteros regarding adoption, social security, and family issues. Argentina was the first country in Latin America to give a green light to same-sex marriage nationwide. It follows the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, Canada, South Africa, Norway, Sweden, Portugal, and Iceland.
My goodness. Those countries are going to collapse. They're going to be set afire. God will punish these countries. Norway? Spain? Oh, my goodness. In Latin America, same-sex marriage is allowed only in Mexico City and not the rest of that country. Civil unions for same-sex couples are allowed in Uruguay, Colombia, and Buenos Aires, as well as the northern Mexico state of Coahuila and the Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul. Brea, 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 brea. Oh, my God. Well, there you go. Apparently, God has dropped his cone of protection away from Argentina now. So, let's see, a plague of locusts will descend, right? Hey, Pat Robertson, what's going to happen to Argentina? Well, what about all those other countries? So, Pat, I mean, they're still around. They're still going to church or not. They're still making babies or not. They're still chock-a-block with couples who are in love or not. A lot of marriages have nothing to do with love and more to do with something else. And here in the United States of America, we have the fetus, dead fetus lover, Rick Santorum. He of man on horse sex. Screaming and frothing at the mouth about the destruction, the utter destruction of the family, of the destruction of everything. Gays are going to get married? What? But that means my hetero marriage is worthless. And we just redid the bathrooms. Oh, I mean, it's hard to, as somebody said, irony in the age of Bush was just deader than a doornail. It is hard to find the means, even extemporaneously as we do on this program, to parody these crazy bastards. I mean, it's almost impossible. It really is. I have never seen a time when such a collection of goofballs and lunatics were able to cop so much media attention and so much attention on this program. God. All right. We have a break here. And when we come back, we will continue the madness. You right-wingers, stick around. I know you like to listen to this program in the dark. And that's okay. But stick around. I will have more stuff to make you wet your pants when we come back.
Welcome back. An outrageous disrespect for our Constitution and for the majority of people in the United States to believe marriage is union of husband and wife. Newt Gingrich. Oh, my. Regarding the WikiLeaks and Private Bradley Manning, who is now being held in a brig at the Marine base in Quantico, Virginia, this from a woman named Cynthia Benjamin, who is part of Code Pink and a member of Military Families Speak Out. She writes, "I'm the mother of an Iraq vet who endured two horrific and lengthy tours in Iraq. I've just written a letter in support to Private Bradley Manning, the 22-year-old intelligence analyst suspected of passing videos and documents to WikiLeaks. Manning is now in pretrial confinement in Quantico, Virginia, facing decades in prison. And if Republican Congressman Mike Rogers has his way, the death penalty. I encourage you to write a letter to this brave young man, and Code Pink will deliver it to him during a rally on Sunday in Quantico near Washington, D.C. To submit a letter to be delivered, please email it to us. In the midst of all the grief my family has endured and the sorrow I feel for the Afghans and Iraqis who have died, I'm grateful that someone out there was courageous enough to bring the powerful and dreadful truths about these wars into the light. Admiral Mullen said that those responsible for the leaks have blood on their hands, but no one could possibly have more blood on their hands than the Bush-Cheney regime and now the Obama administration. The blood of our troops, the tears of their families, the legacy of the innocents killed and maimed in these immoral wars. With these WikiLeaks horrors revealed, it will not be so easy for politicians to convince us that these wars are just, that they are worth bankrupting our nation, or that we can achieve peace by more killing. My hope is that the national discussion that has emerged from the videos and documents will hasten the day when our troops come home. For that, the whistleblowers deserve our deepest thanks." Cynthia Benjamin, Code Pink. You can go to Code Pink's website if you want to send an email of support to PFC. Bradley Manning. I guess he's just a private. I mean, how much, aside from this vile, vomitous screaming from these right-wing pigs, how much respect do we owe Private Manning? A great deal. A 22-year-old, I'm sorry, kid. I say I'm sorry because he is an adult. He's old enough to vote, to drink, to drive, to die, to kill. So no disrespect on my part implied by saying a 22-year-old kid. Why do you suppose Private Manning did what he did? Glenn Beck would say he's a communist, fascist, socialist, murderous Hitlerite. Newt Gingrich and the rest of the right wing would say he's a traitor. Of course, Gingrich and Limbaugh and all the rest of these draft-dodging bastards would say that about their own mothers if it meant they would somehow gain. And they always gain, don't they? But Bradley Manning, what do you think we owe Bradley Manning? Aside from respect and honor, 22-year-old young man who had the courage to assist in getting these documents out to the public. And as Mark Morford wrote in his inimitable way, you know, just an endless road of bombs and death and blood and gore and more death. To what end? Back to the Prop 8 situation, reaction to it. This is Marty, who writes from Sacramento. He writes, "Hi, Mike. I find it interesting that the supporters of hatred and bigotry here in California like to complain about how the decision violates the will of the people. And they hate it when it's pointed out just how easy it is to appeal to bigotry. Especially black evangelicals hate it. One black person, an evangelical, I presume, that I know, had actually said he'd rather die a slave than allow gays to marry. I wish I'd pointed out that it'd be easy to die a slave. But would he rather live as a slave? Speaking ill of most of my fellow Californians, these people would vote to reinstitute slavery. And then after it's overturned for violating the 13th and 14th Amendment, they'd cry, oh, why do we bother to vote when some unelected judge will just overturn our will? Anyway, my best to you, Marty, listening online in Sacramento, where the one station that used to carry you is now running hip-hop gospel. Oh, joy. Thanks, Marty. Hip-hop gospel. What in the hell is hip-hop gospel? Yo! Sue from Ohio writes, Mike, how come in all the years since Massachusetts legalized gay marriage that we've never heard of gay couples filing for divorce? Divorce that has cited married gay people in Massachusetts as the cause for their own marriages to fail. Now, wait a second. I got that all wrong. I'm sorry. Let me start over, Sue. Hi, Mike. How come in all the years since Massachusetts has legalized gay marriage, we've never heard of one single couple, hetero, filing for divorce that has cited married gay people in Massachusetts as the cause for their own marriage's failure? Yeah, that's true. Gay people getting married no more erodes the sanctity of marriage any more than vegetarians inhibit my enjoyment of an occasional hamburger. I've long contended that if a married straight couple in San Francisco feels their marriage is threatened by a married gay couple in San Diego, that they don't need a constitutional amendment. They need a friggin' therapist. Sue from Ohio. Ah, isn't that the truth? Oh, my God. This is the, I swear, the whole same-sex marriage thing, like the undocumented immigrant worker thing, where does this stuff come from? Is it because nobody has jobs anymore, thanks to, for the most part, George W. Bush? Nobody has mortgages or homes anymore. Everything is going up in smoke. So, oh, yeah, let's attack this group and that group. I never expected that I would live at a time in my country where the ignorance would be so incredibly, monumentally pervasive. Never. I just didn't think it would happen here.
Getting ready for
21 past the hour. Oh, by the way, Elena Kagan has been confirmed as the 112th Justice and fourth woman to serve in the Supreme Court. Vote was 63 to 37. Five Republicans joined all but one Democrat and the Senate's two independents to support Ms. Kagan. Ah, that certainly is not news, is it? Huh? I mean, obviously she was going to be confirmed. So many things here. Tomorrow is the anniversary of our nuking Hiroshima. And I think Monday is the anniversary of our nuking Nagasaki. And tomorrow evening, during the program, I want to share with you something that was written a couple of years ago, The Bombs of August, in remembrance of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, by Reg, TV News Lies. I haven't read this in about 5 years, I don't think, but it's timeless, and we'll be sharing that with you tomorrow. The Ground Zero Mosque, so-called, it's not a mosque, it's an Islamic center that will contain possibly a mosque. The protests against the construction predictably ends up with racially motivated hatred. That was the headline in Alex Perrine, I think, wrote this at Salon. He mentions the fact that this was several weeks back. There was a protest attended by various wingnuts, racists, riled-up nativists, and terrified fools of the misnamed Ground Zero Mosque. National conservatives picked up the ball and the hatred was ginned up by Murdoch's New York Post, mainly via perpetually outraged columnist, perpetually outraged columnist Andrea Pazer, whose anti-mosque columns are regularly teased on Murdoch's newspaper's front page. The entire anti-mosque campaign isn't about anything other than pure paranoid Islamophobia. Anyway, there was a protest. This was a couple of weeks ago, and Mike Kelly of the Bergen, New Jersey Record reported this heartwarming incident. Are you ready? At one point, a portion of the crowd menacingly surrounded two Egyptian men who were speaking Arabic and were thought to be Muslims. Go home! Several shouted from the crowd. Get out! Others shouted. In fact, the two men, Joseph Nasrallah and Karam al-Masri, were not Muslims at all. They turned out to be Egyptian Coptic Christians who worked for a California-based Christian satellite TV station called The Way. Both said they had come to protest the mosque. I'm a Christian! Nasrallah shouted to the crowd, his eyes bulging and beads of sweat rolling down his face. But it was no use. The protesters had become so angry at what they thought were Muslims that New York City police officers had to rush in and pull Nasrallah and al-Masri to safety. A frustrated Nasrallah said afterwards, quote, I flew 9 hours in an airplane to come here. End quote. But don't you dare call these people bigots. Interesting, isn't it? What a teachable moment for Mr. Nasrallah, huh? He calls himself a Coptic Christian, and he flew for 9 hours to go protest, and he became the object of the very hatred he was willing to participate in against people who are not Coptic Christians. Maybe there is such a thing as instant karma. But when I read that, I thought to myself, God, can you imagine how this guy must have felt in that particular moment? Huh?
Down with the Muslims!
and the white people come after him. The Christians and the Jews come after him.
Get out!
But
get out!
But I'm not, I'm a Christian. You gotta love a story like that. Thank goodness Mr. Nasrallah and Mr. Al-Masri were not murdered. Because I'm sure that Rupert Murdoch's New York Post would have loved to have put pictures of their brutalized corpses on the cover of this filthy newspaper. Mystified about where all the oil went. A government report said that much of the spilled oil is gone. It's gone. Nearly three quarters of the oil has been collected at the well by a temporary containment camp. It's been cleaned up or chemically dispersed or naturally deteriorated, evaporated, or dissolved, according to a report by the Interior Department and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That would be 152 million gallons gone. White House Energy Advisor Carol Browner said the other day on NBC's Today Show, quote, "It was captured. It was skimmed. It was burned. It was contained. Mother Nature did her part," end quote. It still leaves 53.5 million gallons in the Gulf. It's nearly five times the size of the 11 million gallon Exxon Valdez spill, which wreaked havoc in Alaska all those years ago. Federal officials say that about a quarter of the oil evaporated or dissolved in the warm Gulf waters the same way sugar dissolves in water. I don't know what everything that I see from actual video, it looks to me, sure, there's nothing on the surface, but okay. Charter boat Captain Randy Boggs of Orange Beach, Alabama, is quoted here. He says he has a hard time believing the claims of success with that static kill and has similarly dismissed the idea that only a quarter of the oil remains in the Gulf. He said, quote, "There's still boats out there every day working, finding turtles with oil on them and seeing grass lines with oil in it. There are millions of pounds of tar balls and oil on the bottom." Man. What? what happened? Where did, I mean, it's just like one day we are facing a cataclysmic catastrophe, almost, excuse me, biblical in its proportions. I mean, right up there with the fiery destruction of Sodom, right up there with the when God got really pissed off and unleashed the flood, right up there with the slaughter of the Canaanites. And all of a sudden the next day, hey, let's go swimming. You want to eat some shrimp? I know. Let's go sail fishing. Everything's fine. Look at the water. Look, it's clean. Look at the beaches. Not a thing. Unless you stick your finger into the sand about 2 inches. Whoops, what's that? That's oil. I mean, I don't know. It's just hard to believe that everything is fine now. It's all fine. But that's what we're being told. Everything is fine. So move on. There's nothing here to see. It was just a bad dream. A figment of our collective dream state. All those pictures we saw. All that gurgling, bubbling eruption. Those huge slicks, orange stuff. It just didn't happen. Really? It's gone. There's a website, Legal Schnauzer, like the dog, legalschnauzer.blogspot.com, Legal Schnauzer. And it says there, it reiterates that Obama has stubbornly taken this look forward, not backwards philosophy, where it concerns possible criminal acts during the Bush administration, right? But Republicans, you think they're going to reciprocate? Republicans are let it be known that they are not going to take such an approach if they're able to win back the U.S. House in the November elections. Representative Daryl Issa, don't tell me how to pronounce his name, Issa, I really don't care, is strongly indicating that he is going to launch numerous investigations of the Obama administration if he becomes chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Da-da! So regular Americans are going to wind up, possibly, depending on what happens in November, paying a huge economic price for Obama's timidity. I can't believe this guy, and I can't believe Pelosi, and I can't believe Reid. I really can't. From his perch as the top Republican on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, Daryl Issa has spent the last 15 months constantly blasting the Obama administration on nearly every controversy and calling for countless investigations that the Democratic-controlled committee refuses to order. Issa is willing to go after Obama from multiple directions, according to Legal Schnauzer. He's demanding the administration release details of cabinet officials' travel to events that might benefit Democratic candidates, among other things. Veteran journalist Robert Perry, whom we quote frequently on this program, has written numerous times at consortiumnews.org about Clinton's decision to let the crimes of the Reagan and Bush 1 presidencies go uninvestigated. You remember, what was it called? Iran-Contra? Oh my God, that's from a million years ago. I remember my grandpa talking about that. Iran-Contra. Let's see now, what was that about? Must have been bad. Republicans rewarded Clinton for turning his face away from the murder of hundreds of thousands of people in Central. That's right, hundreds of thousands of civilians in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, butchered during the battle Reagan-Bush one days. But Clinton, being Clinton...
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just not going to turn that way. We're going to move forward here. We're not going to look backward.
Perry has written about that so many times, Clinton's decision to let all that go. And Republicans rewarded Clinton by promptly launching investigations when it took back Congress in 1994. And Clinton, of course, was hampered for the final 6 years he was in office. And his presidency never fully recovered. And then, of course, there was the Monica Lewinsky ordeal, right? Perry writes in a recent column at Consortium News and Truth Out that Obama appears to be heading down the same path. Here we go again. Perry wrote, if Republicans gain control of at least one house of Congress, they would surely launch a wave of investigations against Obama, just like they did against Clinton. Unlike the Democrats, who shy away from investigative controversies, turning their backs even on historic scandals such as Iran-Contra, Iraqgate, Contra cocaine trafficking in the 80s, as well as George W. Bush's torture abuses, illegal wars, blah, 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 blah. Republicans don't do that. Perry says this could have a profound impact on an American middle class that already is suffering by the great Bush recession. By letting Bush criminals off the hook and setting the stage for a thug like ISA to possibly come to power, Obama is likely to throw an anchor to a middle class that already is on the verge of drowning. So with Obama embattled and the Democratic congressional majorities likely to shrink or disappear, the chances for the United States to confront its structural problems will only worsen. With unemployment staying high, many middle-class Americans will sink into a growing underclass. The rich will fight to keep as much of their salaries and bonuses as possible, with the Republicans ensuring that the one political sure thing will be that legislated tax increases won't happen. So that's what and it goes on and on and on. You can go to legalschnauzer.blogspot.com or check out Perry's writings at Consortium News or Truth Out, Robert Perry. This is what the Republicans have in mind. I mean, it's not about legislation. It's about destroying the black man who has the utter temerity to be in the White House. It's a White House. God damn it, it's a White House. Before the hour, she makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign. Susan writes, Mike, the oil is still there and so is the dispersant, but you need a UV flashlight to see it. There is a movement to have demonstrations on the beach with UV flashlights. I hope they get it going. Susan. Andre There are videos of the beaches of L.A. where globs of oil are still buried just a foot beneath the sandy beach surface. It's frightening. Watching these bureaucrats, some are scientists perhaps, blatantly lie was interesting to watch. They could not hide their lying eyes. They knew what they were saying made no sense. From Andre. From Michael. I saw some video of a couple of scientists and conservationists walking on a Louisiana beach who said that on their first trip, everything looked good. But then they brought a shovel with them the next time, and the oil, probably due to the dispersal agent's solvent actions, the oil was just a foot or so down. Then they started looking at the holes dug by sand crabs and realized they were full of oil, as were the crabs themselves. Then they started looking for soft, squishy spots in the sand and realized that all they had to do was put some pressure on those spots for crude oil to ooze up nearby. People at both BP and this administration want this to be a matter of out of sight, out of mind. But even the worst housekeeper knows that dirt swept under the carpet is still there. And Bruce writes, one cubic mile equal 1.1011715 times 10 to the 12th power, U.S. gallons. 10 to the 12th power? Can we go that high? I don't think so. I think you got that wrong. 10 to the 12th power is almost incalculable. Well, it's calculable, but anyway, Bruce writes, 10 to the 12th power U.S. gallons. So with water a mile deep, you don't need to go very many miles downstream to have an awful lot of water. All you need to do is break the oil down into droplets small enough to stay in suspension. Hot oil at the 8,000 pounds per square inch level tends to spray even underwater and throw in millions and millions of gallons of refinery waste on any oil that does not make it to the surface, and that and let the waves break it up. 1/100% of oil to water in a cubic mile would still be a lot of oil. You can't see it, but you can't live in it either. Bruce, that can't be a cubic mile. 1.101 times 10 to the 12th power. And then you've got in parentheses 12 zeros. I don't think so. But then again, I slept through most of the math. Kate in the desert writes, Mike, I woke this morning to NPR hearing petro industry folks and Washington talking heads talking about the oil. Nature cleaned the Gulf. Evaporation took away the fumes. Corexit mixed with oil wasn't any more toxic than the oil. Blah, blah, effing blah. I cried. How many folks are being convinced that this is all over? Kate in the desert. Well, a lot of people apparently. I don't know. It's just getting crazy. Andre writes, I meant Louisiana in writing LA. I said LA beaches. The other emailer was writing about the video I had seen with the hermit crab stumbling from being saturated with oil. I thought you were referring to the one that occurred on the California coast back in the, what, in the 40s? Around Santa Monica, wasn't it? And I've heard that you can still dig in certain spots and oil will will still come up. Ah! Oh, well. Lucifer. I swear to God. Beck. It's got to happen soon. Beck's offing himself during his television show. I feel it. I feel it. I feel it coming. I feel it in my bones. I just hope that somebody will call me and said, "Oh, you missed it!" But it'll wind up on YouTube, I'm sure. Tomorrow is, as I mentioned earlier, tomorrow is the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. And something I'll share with you tomorrow night, written by a friend, The Bombs of August. We are you know this, I mean, we are the only country in the history of the human race that decided to use nuclear weapons to destroy two cities and 250,000 people simply because we could. And Truman, forced into it by the military, the nascent military-industrial complex that a few years later Eisenhower warned us about, Truman, forced into it, decided to go ahead with the dropping of these bombs to let our new enemy that was just developing on the horizon, the Soviet Union, understand what they're going to be screwing with once we disposed of the fascists. Then it would be the communist turn. There was absolutely no military necessity, none, to burn 250,000 people, to burn them, just none. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.